Hello, everybody. Welcome back to This Weird House. I am, as always, Nick Boddick, and today we have a very special guest that I'm so excited to talk to. I just watched a couple of his projects today, this morning, again. We're here with Mr. Virat Paul. How are you doing today, man?
Hi, Nick. How are you? I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, dude.
Thank you for having me over.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I came across your... first came across your work watching VHS Beyond, which everybody should see. It's the best entry. I like all the VHSs. This is my favorite one probably since 2.
Oh, wow.
Viral had some awesome stuff in it too. Anyways, we'll get into that. But yeah, I saw you comment on a thing on Reddit, and I was like, oh man, if I can get in touch with this guy, I have to at least try. So I'm very happy to have you on, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for reaching out.
Yeah, for sure, man. So with authors are who I primarily have on the show, and I'm very happy to finally have a filmmaker. When did you discover horror? When did the genre capture you? Was it through movies? Was it through books? Just kind of where did you come across the genre?
So I grew up in India, in New Delhi, which is the capital of India. And we would all the movies we would watch would, at that point, would either be on VHS tapes or and thankfully we did have a VCR which would work or sometimes not work. But I remember my parents got Psycho, and my mom, because thought it was black and white, she thought I could watch it, and she wasn't totally sure whether I would really. Maybe she had also kind of forgotten the film, though she does. She gets very scared of horror movies and everything. Mm-hmm. She saw The Exorcist when it released. Which came to India in 77. So she was terrified of horror movies and The Omen and everything. But we saw Psycho, and I was, I think, about 6 or 7. And that moment where Mrs. Bates sort of turns on the chair and we see the actual reveal. I think that was the first traumatizing sort of experience. I thought I was terrified of that. And I think because of that, I was very scared of horror movies in general. I used to sometimes just see, VHS covers or, trailers of movies on when we finally got satellite cable, which actually funnily, came to India in 1995-6. And before that, we had 2 or 3 channels, and which were sort of the government channels. And so HBO and there was a channel called Star Movies and all these things over there. And we used to I used to watch all my movies, on those channels. And that's where I kind of got a lot of sort of introduction to movies in general, Hollywood movies, different genres. I was, as I said, very scared of horror, but I was, I did read a lot actually. And all my friends used to love these Goosebumps books, which had become super popular, in the late 90s, early 2000s. So R.L. Stein's Goosebumps were a huge rage. So we used to read that. And so I think actually I read a lot of, those are kind of gateway horror books, one can call them. But I actually read a lot of those. And they were great because, they let your imagination run wild. And then I think when I was in 3rd or 4th grade, I read Frankenstein. I thought Mary Shelley's classic. Frankenstein. Classic. So those were my sort of more literary introductions. I saw The Ring, I think, when I was 13. Again, I was petrified. I was so scared, actually. I was very scared of horror movies for a long time. Even till I was 18, 19, because I know The Grudge released in 2004, and one of my friends, when I was in hostel, when I was about 16, 17, would try to constantly play it. And I would just sort of say I can't watch it beyond that scene in the bed when Kayako is in the covers, underneath the covers. So I thought that was terrifying. But then I got back into horror. My flatmate during my college days was a huge horror fan, and so he used to make me watch a lot of stuff. I saw Tales. We used to watch Tales from the Crypt episodes, which we used to love. So we used to watch that. But we started watching a lot of mainstream horror movies. So from What Lies Beneath to the Sixth Sense, which has come to be one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's a funny story about The Sixth Sense is that because M. Night Shyamalan, being of like Indian origin, everything, he was such a huge deal when The Sixth Sense came out, and everybody was talking about M. Night, and obviously the subsequent movies, which were Signs and The Village and everything. But because Sixth Sense was such a rage in India, and everybody was talking about M. Night, that twist got ruined for me when I was like
Oh,
9 years old.
that sounds so
One of
unfortunate.
my aunts used to live in the US, and she had come back, and she was talking about this movie called The Sixth Sense, and she's like, spoiler alert. And I'm like, oh. So I actually knew what had happened in Sixth Sense. It was also such a huge part of the zeitgeist, so it was very difficult to not know what happens in The Sixth Sense. But like, when I eventually saw the film, even knowing that ending, I thought it was a masterpiece. Like, I
Oh,
it
yeah.
did not hinder my enjoyment in any way. So yeah, I mean, that was sort of my introduction to horror, so to speak. Even till I was 23, 24, I used to watch horror films, maybe like once in a while, maybe once in a month. I'd go out with my friend. We saw obviously The Conjuring, which was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Love The Conjuring.
I saw The Conjuring in a packed theater in Mumbai when it had released, and it was a rock concert. It was that good. And we used to watch, I mean, all the movies which came out. I mean, the horror also had such an evolution. All the 2000s horror movies were so different,
Yeah.
though I have kind of a nostalgia for them now when I look back. Of course, I love the J horror movement, but even other big sort of remakes which had started coming, which were House of Wax, and recently, actually, because of Halloween month, I saw Sorority Row with my wife, which was an interesting
Oh,
movie,
yeah.
especially the remake. But I kind of fully got back into horror, I think, around post The Conjuring, and all these movies started. Like, David F. Sandberg was a huge inspiration, this
Oh,
filmmaker
yeah.
from Sweden who did one of the greatest like horror shorts of all time, which was Lights Out. And just following his journey, I was actually more just interested in him as a student of films, and like this short film which I had seen when it had come out, it was that viral. It had gone viral all over the world, and how he kind of transitioned from there to making a feature of Lights Out, and obviously subsequently all these amazing movies he's done. So I think following his journey, then I kind of sort of got more and more interested, obviously, in James Wan, Mike Flanagan, Lee Whannell. I have to say though, horror is not extremely it's really popular as a genre in India, but not a lot of movies locally are made in the horror genre. I wish there were more,
Oh,
but there were a
okay.
couple which were made when I was growing up, and they were pretty amazing, for their time. And I guess in a way I can look back and say they were pretty seminal even in my horror sort of cinematic learning. So I would kind of will give credit to those films as well, especially a movie called Bhoot, which basically translates to ghost.
BHOOT.
Bhoot, yes.
I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen Bhoot? Amazing.
I try to catch as many, foreign to me, foreign horror films as I can. Not as many as I'd like to, but I have seen Boot. I know that, and I've seen 13B, I think it was
Oh
called.
yeah, that's a great movie with a great concept. I really like 13B's concept. 13B is awesome.
Yeah, it was very. I love the stuff that they do outside of the U.S. Because I mean, that's not to diminish the work they do in Hollywood. There's so much talent, especially right now. I mean, there always has been, but seeing stuff that doesn't normally get done here from other countries has always fascinated me. So yeah, I was just gonna say. So a couple things I wanted to touch base on with your answer there. You mentioned your first traumatic horror experience being Psycho. Mine, coincidentally, I see you're wearing a Blair Witch shirt. And my first traumatic horror movie moment was Mike standing in the basement facing the wall. That was I was
Iconic.
10. Yeah, I was 10 years old, and it just I remember watching the movie with my uncles, and yeah, like the whole movie I was fine. I'm telling you, 99% of this movie, I'm sitting there. I was like, this is really good. I'm not very scared, but I'm very much enjoying it. That last shot in the movie just broke me as a human being. As a 10-year-old boy, I was like, oh, that's it. I'm done. This is it. This is And yeah, I remember that stuck with me for a very long time. And then you mentioned The Ring. If you don't mind my asking, how old are you?
I think
We might be the same age. If
Yeah, I'm 35.
I just turned 35.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say, because you were mentioning all the movies that were just like pivotal to me as a horror fan growing up, like The Ring, that was the first horror movie I remember seeing in the theater, and that was another one that just crushed me. It just scared the dog shit out of me. And yeah, man, so many great movies, especially like you mentioned, it horror really has evolved, especially in the time that we're the same age and the time that we've been alive even, because slashers were kind of the thing for quite a while before, like up until like all through the 70s and 80s. And then once the 90s started, it really started shifting and shifting and shifting, and there was just these different blocks of subgenres that were, like you said, J-horror, and then ghost stories and demonic possession stories, and then there were more like torture porn and all that. Like,
Yeah,
yeah, is and
I remember watching Hostel when when I was I mean not in that kind of a sort of a hostel you sort of stay in when you're traveling, but I was in a hostel in Mumbai when I was during my college days, and somebody sort of had seen this movie somehow, and I wouldn't know how that person procured a copy, but they procured a copy, let's put it like that, of Hostel. And it was I will add to it that many of these movies would just never come to India. Now times have changed and evolved. Obviously, we have streaming platforms where Netflix and Amazon make it very easy to access global sort of movies and TV shows from everywhere. But there was a time where you would only rely on just either television channel sort of programming those things, or it coming in movie theaters. So there were many movies which would just never come, like Saw or Hostel would never get released over there, or it might not even play in like on your like TV channels until like many years later. So sometimes, especially 2000s and mid 2000s, which was like the Wild West of the internet, kind of helped us, or at least helped us during our those formative years of 17 and 18 to kind of see things we would not be able to watch otherwise. But Hostel, I remember, was just one of the most insane experiences, because even the person who got the film was just recommended that it's like a really intense horror film and that we should watch it. But he also wasn't totally aware of what actually happens in the movie. So we were all like six, seven of us huddled together one night, just sitting and watching it. And it was, I mean, if you remember the movie, for about like the first half of the movie, which is nearly like half an hour, 45 minutes, it's not technically a horror film. It's just a bunch of backpackers sort of enjoying Europe and Amsterdam and all that. And we are like, where is this going? And of course, like it is pretty like intense in many different ways, but like when the horror stuff, like when it kind of pivoted and went into that gear, I thought it was, I mean, I had never seen stuff like that before. So it was, we were wincing and like shutting our eyes and kind of looking away throughout. It was very interesting. Obviously, it kind of spawned this entire movement, which obviously like gave birth to many, many other films. But some of them, Saw, especially Saw and Hostel, I think they're pretty like, they're pretty well-crafted horror movies, actually.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree. I would definitely agree. Especially, I would say especially Saw, because I think with Saw, it's almost like an illusion of a movie in a way, because when you really watch it, you know, it's credited with launching this era of horror films that were all focused on like intense gore and torture and blood and guts and all that. There's really not that much violence and blood and gore in the original Saw.
Yeah, it's exactly. It doesn't have that much violence and gore. It's more like a thriller, and
Yeah, very much
and it's
so.
a very effective thriller,
Oh, yeah.
and with one of the greatest twist endings. So I think Saw is, I mean, is a masterpiece. Similar with Conjuring. Conjuring doesn't have a, I mean, it doesn't have blood in it.
No.
And so it was rated R for just scary,
Just being
intense,
terrifying.
being terrifying. It was, I mean, otherwise it's a PG-13 movie, which, by the
Yeah.
way, I have this whole thing. I mean, I don't know a lot about the rating systems and all those classifications are done, but based on my understanding, at least in the last few years, and talking with all my horror friends and like and you know, other screenwriters and filmmakers, there is obviously a tendency to, like, you know, obviously we want movies which are R-rated, which go hard, and you know, with the intense scares and everything. But I, you know, maybe the films which were very formative for me, but like, I love PG-13 horror films, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you.
The Ring was PG-13, The Sixth Sense, The Others, you know. I mean, all these movies were incredible, and The Grudge, and maybe it's just, I'm also perhaps a little nostalgic for that kind of sensibility and aesthetic. I would really hope that, I love supernatural and ghost movies, but I really hope that J-horror kind of, that kind of style, I hope it makes a resurgence, and when we get to see more of those kind of films. Obviously, I hope we get to see many other types of horror, but that's especially a subgenre which I really, really, you know, gravitate towards and miss, I would say.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. Like, there was so many. Again, you keep mentioning all the movies that spring to mind when you mention these subgenres. But yeah, I remember, you know, seeing The Ring and seeing The Grudge and One Missed Call.
Yes, by Takashi Miike. Great.
Yeah. And then going and tracking down the original, the Japanese versions of all those movies.
Yeah, Ju-on and Ringu.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
exactly. And just being fascinated by, like, how they were. I love it when things are adapted and remade, and seeing how they parse out what is most important to keep in a remake and what they decide to leave out, and just being able to compare the two was awesome. And just it only, like, emboldened my love for horror more when I got to see both versions of the same movie. It's so much fun.
Absolutely.
When did you, I guess, kind of, when did you know that you wanted to make movies?
I mean, a little late than usual, like, you know, a lot of other filmmakers. You know, all the filmmakers I admire, I hear stories of how they made, like, these Super 8 movies, or were making, like, movies with camcorders when they were, like, 8 or 9. I didn't know a single person growing up who had, like, a sort of a, you know, a handycam, we used to call it back in the day. My uncle had a handycam, and my mom's brother, and sometimes I would kind of fiddle around with it. But filmmaking, especially for us, like, especially for me growing up in Delhi, even though obviously Hindi cinema and Bollywood and all that is so huge for us, and we used to watch all those movies, but, like, filmmaking or just being part of film seems like such a, it seems like it's done on another planet. It seems unreachable in some ways, until, like, you start getting close to it and start reading and, you know, and just kind of immersing yourself in that world. I think by around 21, 22 is when I actually thought that I could kind of dip my toes into filmmaking, because I always wanted to be, I used to kind of write stories. I used to think that maybe one day, especially when I was 15, 16, people would ask me what I would be, and I would say a movie director. I didn't exactly know what a movie director would do, but movie directors, barring the actors, are kind of the most familiar, sort of famous. They're the most sort of the faces you can associate movies with. So you kind of, I didn't even know for the longest time how there are screenwriters and cinematographers and all these different departments. Obviously, you get to know as you get delve deeper into it. But again, I had no idea. I would say director, but I would not know what a person needs to do to go into that field. A lot of my friends in college, because I had a media degree, but sort of focused on marketing and advertising. Many of my friends, even though they were part of the degree I was in, they kind of went into filmmaking in Mumbai. Some went as actors, some became assistant directors to go into commercials and other things. So I would look at them and kind of feel like, oh, I would feel like kind of inspired by them. And I also, you know, because I right out of college got into Google and I started working there. And even though it's a great company and was such an amazing working environment, and I learned so much working in that setup, I kind of realized after a few months that, like, I actually need to go into the creative sphere and do something in that part, in that zone. So I sort of, you know, started just, you know, thankfully, I think internet was supremely helpful. Just the fact that there were so many YouTube channels and websites and blogs where you could read about screenwriting. You could sort of, you know, see how films are made behind the scenes of movies, checking out like Social Network had such an amazing behind the scenes. And then just sort of backpedaling and seeing a lot of behind the scenes of other movies, seeing these amazing filmmaking channels, which would talk about how, you know, different aspects of filmmaking. So I think that was kind of my education, just following, watching all that. And and then I sort of made my own short when I was about 22 in Mumbai with a bunch of my friends. I started assisting some of my friends and seeing how they work and kind of learning from them. And then I made this like 3-minute black and white short, very much inspired in some ways from Nolan's work. You know, I had seen this movie, he had done Doodlebug, which I thought was so like interesting, and a couple of other shorts which were very impressionistic, like David Lynch mm-hmm. stuff and all that. So I kind of made a 3-minute sort of black and white thing, which I was very proud of, and it was such an amazing experience doing that, that I thought that like, let me just I will just make movies to be able to learn how to proceed ahead. Even though I came to the US then for screenwriting and cinematography, which I always wanted to come here because I thought like, you know, the kind of movies I wanted to make, which were more in the horror sci-fi genre. But I just thought the experience of being here would really help me, you know, in my creative journey going forward. Those are not the kind of movies they were making back then over there. And even still, they're few and far between. But I just thought, let me, this will be a nice way for me to just sort of brush up my skills and, you know, learn so many things about filmmaking. And then I came here and I just started making stuff and I started working here. So, but yeah, that was basically, I think I was about, it's a very long winded way of saying I was about 22, I think 22 gotcha, or around 23. Sure. And then I just went like head on and I totally immersed myself in the filmmaking world.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah. Your black and white, your first short that you made, I have not seen it. I would love to, if it is, I don't know if it's available online, but I saw that in your, I think maybe in your bio on your website or something, you shot it on 16mm film actually, which I thought was awesome.
Yes. That was so the other one. So I made this science fiction sort of two guys in a room shot, which was the first thing I made in the US. So the one, the black and white was the one I made in India, that was made on digital, but the one I came gotcha. To LA with like some of my friends over here, and like we kind of just got this team together and made this movie, the science fiction sort of 15-minute short called Doxpara, which was a play on the word paradox. And it was just about two guys in the room who kind of get stuck in this time loop, and a minute which keeps repeating itself, and how one person may have like knows this is happening and the other person is kind of caught between. Again, a movie which was very inspired by the kind of science fiction movies I was that time very drawn to, like Primer and
love Primer.
Yeah, a lot of films like Coherence. I was again very, there's this amazing movie called Coherence.
I love Coherence.
Yes. So just I was trying to and I was actually I'm such a big fan of these movies, and especially Coherence, which is high concept on ideas, you know. Mm-hmm. It is essentially people in a room, in a house, you know. It's that kind of movie. But the fact that the concept is so brilliant and it's so extremely and so immaculately like executed, it makes it feel like bigger than it is, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I saw Coherence, and like I know it's not a horror movie, but I always thought it, I think of it as a horror movie, because like what's going on in it is like, it's a terrifying concept.
Yes.
And like I love that movie, and I always shout that movie out any chance I get. Yeah. Like there's another one in the vein of Coherence and Primer called it's on a boat. Triangle.
I love Triangle. Triangle, it even has that famous Australian actress. She's incredible. I'm
the blonde woman.
Yes.
Man, yes.
She's great. She's great. She was also in, I think, if I'm not wrong, in this movie called Tourist Stars.
I don't know that one.
Oh, Tourist Stars. It was kind of like, I would say Tourist Stars is a fun sort of, I would recommend for people who, if they are fans of Hostel, and those kind of movies where a bunch of backpackers go to an exotic...
Yes, I have seen it, yes.
They go to an exotic location, they go to this mm-hmm. very nice, beautiful scenic beach, and they meet a bunch of people and...
Yep, well, I do remember that one now, yes.
No, I love Triangle, because again, Triangle takes that concept of... it kind of merges different genres. It's like a slasher sort of movie, but mm-hmm. there is a whole sort of a... like a time loop sort of angle mixed in it. It's incredible. I love the angle.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Damn. Our interests align so much. It seems like that's crazy.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask about, so your short film, The Bells is, so I saw that when it first came out and didn't know.
Oh,
until,
you did.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually about once a year, I will just YouTube new short horror films or, you know, whatever I put in. And, you know, that one came up one of the times I searched it and I saw it and I would say firmly in my top three favorite short horror films available on YouTube. Didn't know until literally yesterday that the person I was about to be interviewing had made it. So you can imagine my excitement there.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah. You mentioned Lights Out before, the short film.
Yeah.
And I rank it up there with Lights Out and The Smiling Man. I love
it. Oh, wow. I love The Smiling Man. Oh, I really appreciate. I'm so happy that you liked it. It kind of boggles my mind that you had watched it when it had come. But you recently discovered that, you know, I had made it, but that was I would say my first foray into proper horror. I gave myself from 2014 to about 2017, I sort of went on a horror education where every day I would try to watch a horror movie. I would analyze it. I would break it down. I would read horror screenplays and just watch a lot of horror short films, horror films, across like horror shows, you know, anything I could like kind of get my hands on, American Horror Story, and then obviously later on Channel Zero, all these things which I was just, so that, I started like sort of just, that was just my way of sort of giving myself a class into, you know, horror movies and be it like Don't Look Now, or like old or Repulsion, or like, you know, watching horror movies from, you know, from the back in the day, or because I've seen all the like famous and the popular ones, which everybody has seen, which are all great and classics for a reason. But like watching the ones which like I haven't like, you know, I had not seen before, like Exorcist 3, The Legion, you know, or like just is kind of like Candyman, you know, all these movies I had never seen. So I started watching all these and then I wrote, I think two or three short horror scripts thinking, because I had already kind of made a feature. I made this micro budget feature with a bunch of my friends. That was more of a noir thriller. I wouldn't even say it's horror adjacent. It's basically a noir sort of more of a drama thriller. But I was so interested in like some of the suspenseful scenes we had in that film. I thought, you know, actually I really enjoyed making them, editing them sort of. So I thought like it's time that I should just kind of see... I think because of my sort of watching all these horror movies and kind of immersing myself in this world, it kind of inspired me to try my hand at horror and see if, you know, we can make something scary. And I wrote a bunch of horror short scripts and these bunch of creative like sort of collaborators, actor friends, composers, cinematographers. They had all sort of worked in horror in some of the other capacity, but they were all excited to make something. So they would like give me notes and feedback on the short scripts. We tried making two of them earlier, but like we couldn't get all the pieces together. And funnily enough, I got married to my sort of college sweetheart back in 2017. And she came over and she was very excited to just like work and with me and produce a sort of short together. And I think I would give her and a lot of other my friends credit to kind of push me and then like kind of mold the thing. And Bells sort of stemmed out from that. We had no rules. I was in a way very ignorant. And I like that I was, because When you're trying to make something, you should try to like, once you've done all the work, you've got all the notes, you've done all the rewrites on the script, then you try to just put blinders on and not hear any of the noise and just mm-hmm. sort of make something. Because we were trying to break so many rules in that shot, and which were not done, but we were just trying to do something different. And I was kind of amazed once we put it all together. I was trying to literally learn it. Like, I don't want to put it to like, I don't want to compare it to math, but like, especially like these scare scenes, like they have a rhythm, you know, and mm-hmm. I was trying to learn from all the great movies, how they sort of set up a jump scare. How do they set up these moments? How do you put the breadcrumbs? How do you have that moment of a reveal, the stinger moment? What do you have? So that was, I kind of learned it throughout the process of doing the bells, from shooting, from writing it to shooting it to editing it. And we were all wondering, like, my wife, because this was first time she was actually producing something. She used to do a lot of branded stuff and work with brands like L'Oreal and all that in Mumbai. But she had never done narrative stuff. So she was on the set, and she didn't tell me actually when we were on set, but like later on, when the film came out and actually was doing well, she told me, you know, I was on the set and I was wondering, what the hell are we doing? How is this going to edit together? This looks so kind of stupid. I'm like, cause when you're making a horror film, you don't really know whether this will all come together. You know, you don't have all the sound design and the music and all. You've not edited it together in that particular way. So it was a great learning experience. And I remember putting it together and showing my cinematographer the first cut, and he yelped at one moment. And that's when I thought that, oh, I think we might actually, I might have been able to be in some way successful to what we were trying to do. And obviously when we put it out online, I had never put out anything on YouTube by then. We just thought, let's like, just, you know, put it out for the world to
get
see
it out there.
Get it out there, you know? And I had no expectations whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I remember that when it hit 5,000 views, we were so happy. We're like, 5,000 people have watched it. We never would have imagined it. And then it kind of just snowballed to like 10,000, 20,000, 50,000. And when it reached 100,000, I remember writing an email to all my, all the people who had worked on the film saying, hey guys, we hit 100,000. This is incredible. And they were all so happy. And then obviously it just took a life of its own, and people would react to it online. And I think that the reception of that short was also very integral on us continuing this horror journey, because it gave us a lot of confidence that I can continue making things, you know. I really give a lot of credit to the bells for that, because there was something in that idea which perhaps I thought, and that's with all ideas actually, and you never know what can actually somehow connect or the hook can click with people. We all thought that, oh, this is something interesting. I wonder, you know, if people will really respond to it. So it was, mm-hmm. it was great. It's really touching 9 million views now. So it's quite amazing that it has had this journey all these years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And dude, thank you for so watching cool. when it came out.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Thank you for making it. So when I watch The Bells, I get, you know, classic ghost story vibes. I get classic haunted house vibes. And then I get like a, almost like a cosmic horror Lovecraftian vibe to it. And just, it was such a cool coalescence of all these different things that just, it worked for me on every level.
Oh, thank you.
One thing I'm curious about, and if the answer is no, it's no, but did, when you were writing The Bells, did you have anything in mind for like what it was, like what the bells represented and like what they were and like why they were happening to this guy? Did you have that kind of backstory in your mind at all?
Yes, there was. And there have been people in the comment section which have kind of given a theory sometimes to what they interpreted from the shot. Sometimes they are just like writing something which we had never thought of, and it's very interesting and intriguing to read that. But some people get it just right. And I'm amazed, because it's as if they were able to put all these pieces together and read between the lines, because the short doesn't answer it doesn't answer any of these questions and kind of keeps it vague, which I think was very interesting and makes your imagination run wild. Yeah. But I had sort of an idea of this kind of familial sort of curse which is happening to the men in the family. That's why in the beginning of that shot, they say that their uncle just recently passed away and it's a closed casket ceremony. And you wonder that this main character who's talking to his sister at that point, he's like, and she's like, what really happened? What happened to him? And then obviously, while they're having that conversation on the phone, is when he starts hearing the bells. And there is this whole sort of backstory and a sort of a larger concept I had built around it. Actually, I always envisioned it as a feature. So we were condensing, but I won't say that the feature idea came to me before the shot, but it's as if they were parallelly going in my mind, especially when I was editing it. I was thinking, this is how the story could sort of expand and everything, but in terms of but the short had the whole idea of there being a curse and how it was being transmitted from the males in this family, but perhaps it had something to do with their ancestors and the entity which comes after them. Why does it look like that? There is an entire reasoning behind it, but there was that entity had some connection to perhaps things which had been done by their forefathers, you know. So we were all the short. I mean, it doesn't really go into any of these things, but the idea was, do we have to pay for the sins of our forefathers, you know, of things they have done in the past, you know, kind of again, not only using cosmic horror, but also again getting back that sort of circling back to that J horror kind of vibe of revenge, of there being a curse, of people being affected by something somebody else has done, but they're connected to it in some way. So those were many things I was kind of thinking
that's
of.
That's awesome.
And obviously using sound. I thought using sound as an harbinger of doom, I thought that was very... I had not at that point totally seen something like that, or at least not in the short horror format. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very interesting. The sound will always tell you that it's coming after you, especially if you're the only person who's hearing it.
Yeah. Sound design is so important. I feel always in every genre of film, but especially in horror, because like you were saying before, crafting a jump scare is just as reliant on sound as it is the visual aspect of it.
And absolutely.
Creating atmosphere is just as reliant on sound as anything else.
And yeah, I would say sound is the one of the most essential parts of any kind of film. And many times, and I know many, many filmmakers and have said it before me, but like when you're starting out and you're making your films, there is a tendency to focus more on the visual side of it, because obviously it's a visual medium. So you want to get the best cameras, you want to sort of light it in the most beautiful way, and that's all amazing, and you should do that and storyboard it out and do whatever your process is, but you have to pay a lot of attention to sound, because bad visuals or shoddy visuals you can still get away with, people can still watch it, but bad sound it just doesn't feel right.
It cripples a film. Agreed.
So it just doesn't feel like a real movie, you know. It feels kind of amateurish. So you have to have sound is key, you know. And obviously, getting good sound is one thing, but then really focusing on sound as a cinematic tool to sort of craft your story, that is very, very important.
Yeah, for sure. So jumping forward a little bit, excuse me, you, how I became familiarized with your work after... before realizing you had made something I'd seen a while back, VHS Beyond, which I see you got a poster for behind you there. It's good, good promotion right there for sure. They're going to be happy. So I'm just curious how you got involved with that project, and were you familiar with the VHS films before you got involved with this one, and just kind of your thoughts on the whole franchise.
I was familiar with the franchise. I was a huge fan. I saw the OG VHS, the first one, when I was in Delhi, even before I ever came to the US. So, which is crazy to me. I was obviously subsequently a big fan of all the filmmakers which were associated with the VHS movies, from David Bruckner to Ty West, Adam Wingard,
yes,
Timo Jahanto, Gareth Evans, all these amazing filmmakers. And so I was, and we, the first VHS terrified me. I thought it was, I'm a sucker for found footage. I love found footage. I think it's an incredible genre.
It is my favorite subgenre of horror.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I saw Rec. I think Rec, yes. Spanish film, I would put it as one of the top horror movies ever made. But in general, found footage, I think there are always so many inventive ways, be it obviously Rec, be it Blair Witch Project, Lake Mungo, Host, Gonjiam. There are so many things, as above, so below. There's so many ways horror and so many different points of view you can do with found footage. It's very interesting. But coming back to VHS, I mean, I was a huge fan. I obviously, second VHS 2 has one of the greatest segments ever, which is Safe Haven. But it has so many other amazing segments also. The one which was made by Eduardo Sanchez, which was the zombie one with the GoPro. I thought it was so unique, so innovative to do something like that. Slumber Party, yeah. Alien Abduction, all these great. I mean, even VHS Viral has some fun things.
I
it has
Viral.
Nacho Vigilanto doing one of the best segments, which is Parallel Monsters, which is so amazing. Yes. The Spanish segment.
Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead.
They did a segment called Bone Storm where they go to Mexico. Yep. Yeah.
That was my favorite part of that one. I love Bone Storm.
Yeah. I was a huge fan of the series. I remember when it got rebooted at Shudder. I was excited as a fan, like everybody was. And I watched VHS 94, 99, and 85. It's a fun story that VHS 99 came out when I was back, just, you know, visiting home. I go back to India a lot. I'm an only child, and my parents, you know, keep requesting that I come back as often as possible. Sometimes I'm able to go twice a year. Sometimes I'm able to go even more than that, you know. Sometimes it's even for work. So I was actually with my wife back home when VHS 99 had dropped on Shudder. And we watched it. And we were having such a great time watching these segments. And I was in this city called Dehradun, which is about 200, 250 kilometers away from Delhi. It's like this beautiful scenic hill town where my parents also have a small apartment, and we were going to the airport over there, my wife and I was telling her that, like, because we had just seen VHS 99 the previous night, and I was like, oh, it would be so amazing to have a VHS segment set in India one day, you know, wouldn't it be so cool that they should do something like that. And we were just spitballing on ideas and just sort of dreaming of what it could be. And so it's kind of, I would just, the only word I can describe is surreal, that 2 years later, I kind of got to be part of this process. Yeah. It was I would call it a dream come true. And generally, I've been like working in horror and developing projects for many years, feature projects, this many different things. I did a short 2 years ago in Delhi, which was the first thing I kind of made over there, which really blew up here and did really well. It's called Night of the Bride. I should be putting it out soon, hopefully, in YouTube.
Nice.
It's just like a 7-minute horror short. But so I was also, that also experience made me think, oh, I would really love to make something back home in India as well. And this opportunity, the way it came my way, is one of the most sort of like the stars aligning in just the right way. And it's funny because last year, last October, which is when they announced VHS 7, which turned out to be VHS Beyond, it was a bloody disgusting post, like an article. And I was like just sort of scrolling through the website and I saw VHS 7 has been announced. That's so amazing. And it was on October 13th, which is my birthday. So my birthday, they announced VHS 7 and I was so excited. And I was like, oh, I wonder who are the directors for the upcoming installment, because they announced that a couple of obviously months later. And I was talking to my screenwriting friends and, like, you know, with my wife Nehal and all that. We're like, who's going to be the director? So we were so excited. And lo and behold, like a couple of months later, I kind of came in contact with the producers, and this whole thing happened. It was surreal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I would give all the credit to this to our producer of VHS, Josh Goldblum, who's been the producer since VHS 94. And he's kind of the main architect of this, of the series, especially since VHS 94. I would say he's kind of the showrunner, this main creative force, which kind of puts it all together, gets all the filmmakers together. It was his vision that has led to this, because he later on told me that he was so inspired by, he saw RRR last year. He saw Kill, this kind of action movie which came from India, which kind of blew up in the US and all over the world. Really amazing sort of action thriller. I highly recommend it. He was thinking of Indian cinema and just kind of sort of tinkering and with these ideas in his head, can we do an international segment set in India? Now, they already had some filmmakers already on board. Jordan Downey was already working on his segment, and Justin Martinez and Kate Siegel. But they had like some segments which they were still wondering what they can do with it. And one of them was this one. And like Josh reached out to a friend of his in Texas, who's like this amazing film curator and film journalist named Josh Hurtado, who is an American living here, but he has an encyclopedic knowledge of Indian cinema and is a huge sort of, I would say like a huge authority on Indian movies. And he reached out to him asking for any filmmaker recommendations. And he sort of reached out to this really big filmmaker in India named Anurag Kashyap. He's a huge sort of filmmaker. He's like been lauded by Martin Scorsese and Tarantino and all that. And he's like, he kind of got this indie sort of like the way Tarantino and Richard Linklater and all these guys got this indie spirit in the 90s. Anurag Kashyap got that for Indian cinema, like in the late 90s and 2000s. And he's like a big sort of like, he got a revolution in the Hindi film. So he's credited for many, many things, but also for he's a very supportive and amazing guy and helps out a lot of filmmakers. And he was aware, he's a huge horror fan, a huge genre fan. And we had spoken about doing some stuff in the past together. And he knew about me, and he, for some reason, is a big fan of all the shorts I've put out and everything. So he just sent me a message on WhatsApp saying, "Hey man, like, do you want to do VHS?" I said, "What?" I mean, just the message was kind of like crazy to me. I didn't quite totally believe what he was saying, but I'm like, "Yeah, of course." He's like, "I want to recommend you for this segment. They've reached out to me asking for horror filmmakers, and I can only think of one guy, you." So I said, "Okay."
That's so cool.
It was amazing of him, and obviously Josh Hurtado and him saw all of my work. They recommended me to Josh Goldblum, who saw my work. He really liked it. We just got on a call together, and I had an inkling that perhaps they might want to do a segment in India. Is why we are talking. And I kind of went in prepared with some ideas which could be set over there. And Dreamgirl was one of my pitches. And he loved the pitch. We obviously started talking with Shudder and Studio 71 and all the other sort of producers involved. And it kind of, we went off to the races then.
That's awesome, man. What was there any, I guess, so I had a question, but now that you mentioned that the producer or the gentleman you mentioned, I'm totally blanking on the name, the showrunner effectively wanted a specific, a segment specifically set in India. I was going to ask it like how the Bollywood dance sequence, if there was any like pushback because like, you know, putting that into a, cause it was so elaborate and so like,
yeah,
well done. And you know, I love seeing it. I'm kind of getting into Bollywood now, and I love everything that's going on over there. But seeing that, like, so I love when the subject of a film, usually it's in found footage, but like, yeah, I love when the subject of a film is a film.
Yes.
So like, I was already on board when I see, you know, that the POV character is walking around on a film set, kind of capturing the direction of this sequence. And then when it transitioned into the actual sequence, I was like, I've never seen this in a VHS movie. I've never seen this in any found footage. I was like, this rules so much. I love
thank
this.
You.
And yeah. Yeah. Thank my, you. My question was if there was any kind of pushback on that at all into including that into an otherwise just straight up horror film.
No, I mean, Josh Goldblum was super supportive throughout. I told him, this was my initial pitch to him, that bunch of we will use a paparazzi kind of point of view in found footage, which I thought was very interesting, and how they land up on this film set and how there is this leading like actress who's become very famous, but there's something not right about her, and how they'll stumble onto the film set where they'll actually see the song record, and then shit will... They'll sneak into a trailer and some and shit will go down. But like when I told him that we'll see this song, and he started laughing and he said, "That's the most insane thing I've like the most craziest thing I've heard, and I love it." And so he was on board throughout. Shudder was very excited. I showed them some references of you know songs from there, especially a song like this, which is called an item song in Hindi movies. Like, which is basically a song which is used to promote inside a movie. It kind of stops for about 2-3 minutes, and the song is interwoven in the story, but it's also a way of promoting the film. It can be used as a music video for promotions and stuff. So, okay. So they were always on board. I showed them some references. They loved it, and there was, I think, they were not totally, they didn't totally anticipate. And this is, I'm just wagering a guess because I based on my conversations with them, I don't think they totally realized how elaborate we would go with the song. But I think when they did see the final result, they were so pleasantly surprised and happy with it, because even they didn't realize it. And actually, I would even take a step back and say, I was very surprised in how we were able to execute it. At the level we were able to execute it, because I wasn't totally sure we would be able to hit that high, especially with the song, because putting it together was difficult. You know, all we composed an original song, getting the choreography, the backup dancers, the cameras, and everything. I did tell them. I told Josh once, how crazy would it be? Like when we were basically discussing the ideas and kind of working on the script, I said, how crazy will it be that through the point of view of this button cam, which this guy has on his shirt, we are seeing them being flies on the wall on the set, but then we transition as the song is beginning into this cinematic aspect ratio. He's like, bro, just go for it. And I'm like,
oh, that's so cool.
I mean, they were so like supportive throughout. I said, you do realize the aspect ratio will change. We'll make it 2-3-9. Isn't that crazy? And he's like, I love it. Let's do it. And I,
that's so cool.
You're right. Like I had also never seen something. I forget VHS segment. I mean, obviously it's crazy to be in a VHS segment, but it's even crazy. Like in found footage movies, you don't see things like this. But I thought, you know, this is the 7th installment. Let's take a big swing and do something which is totally wild. And you know, I was aware, and I have since even, I mean, we've got such an amazing reception for the entire film, even for our segment, and it's been great. But I can sometimes tell that like, perhaps VHS and it having such a grunge, punk rock sort of like horror aesthetic and sensibility. Song is not something you would immediately think of being there. So I don't know if it's everybody's cup of tea. And obviously it is subjective. But then sometimes you want to put things which just shake things up, you know. And every segment, this movie has been put together so well. Every segment is so different. But this one especially gives you a flavor of being on a Bollywood film set, which is essentially what we were trying to do, and a song is a very essential part of it. So
I agree. Like I remember I was sitting right there. I'm looking at my couch right now. I was sitting there watching it on my laptop, and I literally stopped it and turned over to my fiance. Like when it transitioned into the song, I was like, you're not going to believe this. Like I was, cause I'd been waiting for Beyond to come out, and I was like, I'm seeing like, I've never seen anything like this. I pulled her aside and was like, this is incredible. And I made her watch it.
Oh, wow. Thank you for making her watch it. That's what we were trying to do, because I knew it. And I think all of them knew that it was, I mean, total credit to Josh Goldblum for having a vision of putting something like this in the movie, because I can, I don't know what all happened behind the scenes, but I can imagine there being, I mean, everybody kind of wondering, will this totally work or not? But I remember in the edit, when we edited the song and put it in our first sort of like cut, which I presented to them, Josh loved the entire music video. He's like, bro, it would be blasphemous for us to touch it. So don't touch that part. It's great. I'm like, so okay, great. Cool, because I was a little worried that if we kind of cut it, like it will not totally flow with the song and what has to happen after the song. And I'm like, I had not even told him anything from my end. I was actually going to make a pitch. Like, can we just have it 2 minutes just like this? And even before I could say anything, he's like, we're not touching that section. I'm like,
okay. Oh man, that's be so like validating. And
yeah,
that's amazing, man.
I mean, the way these movies are put together, it's director's movie first. They are so hands off. It's they're extremely like supportive in terms of obviously giving you incredible notes and sort of helping you throughout the process creatively. But they also are so like the producers just kind of just shudder. They just kind of like embraced everything we were doing, which was amazing. The fact that we traveled to Mumbai to shoot the whole thing and kind of work with local sort of cast and crew over there, it being in Hindi and not in English. I mean, this was a huge sort of, it was incredible through and through. So I really give them a lot of credit for that.
It was a big swing. And like, I'm glad that it's getting the reception it is. Cause I've talked to a bunch of my like horror friends, my author friends, and that's is a consistent like contender for their favorite one the Bollywood sequence is just so like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep like, you know, beating on it, but like it is so memorable, especially when you've seen six other entries in the VHS series. It is such a standout thing that happens that it's just like, I'm never going to forget where I was when I was watching that for the first time, because it is so unlike anything I'd ever seen. Like, it's incredible work, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. So we are actually almost at an hour here, but I did want to ask you one more thing.
Sure.
I'm just going to say right now, you and I are going to have to do at least another episode at some point, because I have a feeling we could talk about horror for days.
Absolutely. We have so many things we can still cover.
Seriously, we have so much in common.
Yeah, just the taste. I love all the movies which you have mentioned, the movies you kind of responded to, which I mentioned. I just love it. It's like meeting a kindred spirit.
Yeah, for sure. One last thing I did want to ask you though today, when it comes to, so you have made both traditional, well, I don't want to say narrative because all your work is narrative, but like you've made traditional format films, and then you've also made this found footage film. What is like the biggest difference in, you know, traditional filmmaking and found footage filmmaking? And do you have a preference for either, or you know what I mean? Just kind of the difference in styles there.
Yeah, I mean, so you have to embrace the format you're working with. Obviously, like a traditional filmmaking, you have many more kind of cinematic tools you can kind of fall back on. You can have score, for instance, which is very, you know, kind of essential to movie making. You can obviously block and shoot things in just the way you would like it. It can have its own cinematic language, but found footage in itself has its own cinematic language also. But it is supposed to, for it to feel really authentic and real, it has to have a certain organic quality to it. And that was something which was a big learning for me also. I kind of went and watched all the great sort of found footage horror films, from your Blair Witch to, as I mentioned, Wreck and so many others, just to see how they blocked scenes, it feels so immersive in some ways because it feels real. And I think that is very, very important. So cinematographer Tapan to like all our actors, we kind of went into this found footage sort of crash course, so to speak, where we would watch all these movies. We watched the previous VHS segments to get into idea of how they were doing it and just see how can we block the action where it feels real and authentic, but also kind of visually interesting. And I think that was something we you have to rely on the characters, and that is most important, and they will guide the camera movement as opposed to you in traditional filmmaking, where you can have a lot of different angles and different short sort of designing, which could which really can help you. So that you don't have that in found footage. So that does make it extremely, in I would say, challenging, but also interesting to find different unique ways. Like, we had a lot of push and pull and kind of friction with some people on the set, with our AD especially, who like sometimes wouldn't totally understand the found footage element of it, because those kind of movies are not really made a lot over there in India. So mm-hmm. So everybody who was working on set, I was kind of constantly telling them to go back and rewatch found footage movies to get into the whole conceptual understanding of what we have to do. Because many times he would just say, can we just like get a single close shot of that? Can we get an insert of that? I said, no, that's not possible. We can't do that, because a character needs to organically be present there. There's so much improvisation we were doing, the actors, we kind of encouraged them to do. But that kind of helped. So you have to kind of hit these notes narratively, but they have to come out so authentically that it feels real. It doesn't feel forced, or it doesn't feel staged in any way. So I think that was something.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I was going to say, because if there's a box, you know, over there.
Yeah.
You can't, we as viewers can't know there's a box over there until the person, you know, filming turns and sees that box.
Exactly. Or the contents of that box, you know, in a traditional movie, you can have like, you can have a very cool shot where the camera just kind of lingers behind and kind of like tilts down and shows you what is there in it, or something which the characters are not seeing. But here you can't do that, because the characters are sort of eyes into the story, and their cameras and everything. I don't have a preference per se. I loved the entire experience of making this. I would happily work on another found footage project. I would love that. It was great. I actually made one small 3-minute thing during the pandemic with a bunch of our friends in 21, which was kind of our first foray into found footage. So I had some experience with it, but this was obviously like totally like doing something at this scale and level. Mm-hmm. But I do understand with found footage that people can be very, like, you have to be very, very, as now, sometimes you don't want to, and this is the whole part of filmmaking, like, you don't want to, like, sometimes give a lot of information and spoon-feed things to the audience. But now, sometimes, watching a lot of reactions and seeing people's reviews and just reading stuff online, I can sometimes tell that, oh, there are things you can get away with in traditional filmmaking and traditional narrative filmmaking, which you can't get away with in found footage. And it's not even about getting away with, like, you might have all the information already there, but if you don't totally spell sometimes some things out, people might miss some of the things. And one of the things which like really gets to me, and I've now since like thought about it, and not a lot of people mention this, but sometimes I see people mentioning it, and when I tell them, or if it's like somebody asks me, they're like, oh, okay. But like, we didn't really, because the seventh installment, there have been so many VHS movies, so many found footage movies, so you understand where cameras would be. But we have this dialogue where the guy says, is the button cam on me? But we never make a moment like they make in Safe Haven in VHS 2, where they kind of look at the button and see, tap on it and everything. So sometimes people are like, so where was the camera on him? I'm like, it was on his shirt. Like, we just, it was literally a button camera, which, by the way, those really exist, and we used it. That was our actual thing. There's some shots from that. It's like a button which you can just kind of put like this on a shirt. Kidding. Yeah, it's like these, you can get them off Amazon for like $50. It's crazy. So it's like a button camera. And many times in the film, you see him like kind of like sort of cleaning it up and everything. But sometimes people would like get confused, would get a bit confused. And also like the whole aspect that we used the studio cameras, which were there. You see the song being shot, and then later on them being there kind of motivates and justifies the footage we get from the studio cameras. But I do feel sometimes found footage movies also are having this kind of evolution, and we are seeing where they can go. But I think, you know, but they also, you, sometimes when you, as we kind of going back to one other thing we discussed, when you take a wide swing, especially in found footage movies, you have some people are just like on board and are loving it. Some people like it's something so new for them, so it can be a little jarring and jolting. So that is something I've realized with found footage, that sometimes they also have to adhere to a certain kind of aesthetic found footage films are known for it to work for audiences, which is not the case with narrative and traditional filmmaking. You can do anything with that. You can shoot on digital, you can shoot it on film, you can shoot it in 2:39 or 1:85 or 2:1. I mean, there's so many things you can do. So Yeah, I hope that kind of gives you a sense. I mean, I can keep going
yeah.
on and on about found footage versus this, but I think they're both incredible formats. I'm loving the fact that people are watching VHS Beyond, and I'm just liking these kind of found footage movies. Obviously, these Hell House LLC movies, which are on Shudder, are
yes.
amazing. You know, they have that found footage conceit, and Incantation, The Medium, all these movies which have come out. One Cut of the Dead had a little bit aspect of found footage in it. I mean, I love that this format is continuing, because I think there are so many stories which can be told with found footage. And I really love found footage. I mean, screen life also, you know, when everything is on a screen. I love these kind of movies, like
Unfriended
Searching, Unfriended.
Yes.
I think those kind of movies, I mean, are very innovative. And I would love to just see them kind of being made, and new stories being told, and different genres being tackled. So I guess that's my sort of way of saying I love both.
for sure. Well, dude, next time we do this, I think we should have an episode where we just discuss found footage, because I have a feeling we both have a lot of opinions and a lot of things to say about that specific subgenre.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk with someone who loves it as much as I do, because I'm a giant found footage fan.
Wow, yeah, for sure. You will have to tell me your top three, though, if you have one on the top of your head.
Yeah. So my number one is As Above, So Below.
I love As Above, So Below.
That is, to me, that movie says so much more than what you initially glean from it on its surface. And it is just, it's so expertly done. In my opinion, this is just my opinion. I've met people who hated the movie, but like, it to me is the pinnacle of found footage. Oh man, you know, honestly, for as much as I love it, I haven't really thought about my favorites. I know that's it. I also love, like, the original Blair Witch, yes, but I love the 2016 Blair Witch.
So do I.
Yeah,
I really think Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett, like, they did something really, like, interesting. And
yeah,
the last few minutes of that film are terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
There is this
and to pick it up almost 20 years later,
yeah.
And just I speaking of which, I have an episode of this podcast where I had the cast of that movie on.
Oh wow!
If you want to check that out, yeah,
I will
really
definitely
cool
check it out.
Yeah, it was fun to talk to them. But yeah, I love the. That's got to be up there for me. And then there's another one that isn't real. Like, it's sort of considered found footage, sort of not. I guess I consider it found footage. It's called it's a movie called Banshee Chapter.
Yes, I know Banshee Chapter.
Love that movie. Like,
with Katia Winter, I think that's the actress in Banshee Chapter.
I believe so. Yeah. It's about, like, the Ted Levine is in it. Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that one. That one has so many individual moments in it that stick out in my mind as being like, that got me so bad the first time I watched it.
Yeah. And there is this really cool Australian horror film called The Tunnel. I would recommend
it. I love The Tunnel. Yes.
Oh.
I love The Tunnel.
Yeah. Oh, man.
What about you? What are your favorites? Your top three found footage?
Yeah, it's such a difficult question, you know, because it constantly keeps changing. And I sometimes when, you know, I ask you the question, but also like when somebody asks me, like, I say top three and then later on I will be like, oh, that film was incredible. I should have mentioned that as well.
I just had that just now, because Hell House LLC.
Hell House LLC.
That's up there for me.
The first one is, I think, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. In terms of top three, I would have to say Wreck, as I think one of the scariest films I've seen ever,
and
totally incredible sort of found footage POV point of view. I love As Above, So Below, so I would totally agree with you on that. Just the idea of going into the catacombs and the way the story kind of interweaves with these characters, I think it's an incredible film. And for a third one, I'm going to say this just because I think I think it's just a really fun watch, and especially it kind of ties into my love for supernatural the genre a lot. It's Gonjiam, The Haunted Asylum, South Korean film. I think it's so much fun and some highly highly creepy imagery. So these are the films. Obviously, there's so many more. I already mentioned Lake Mungo, a very sort of introspective, thoughtful horror film.
That's
very scary.
So sad.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but there's so many. I mean, Hell House. There is this movie called Be My Cat. I don't know. Have you seen
a film for Anne?
Film for Anne.
That movie is terrifying.
It's a very like very amazing sort of indie film made by this incredible filmmaker. It deserves a lot of love, which it gets. And yes. I mean, there's so many films. There's films from around the world. You know, I just wish there are more found footage movies made. Like even India has tried to make, you know, found footage movies. I just wish there were more made over there. And obviously, I'll have to give a special sort of shout out to one of the most amazing. I mean, I know I'm wearing Blair Witch Project, obviously Blair Witch Project, but Paranormal Activity, the entire series.
How could I have forgotten that? The whole series.
Especially the third one, which I think is just phenomenal. It's super scary.
I agree. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
One of the best horror sequels, in my opinion. Found footage or not.
Absolutely.
It did so well to expand that whole world and the story. Yes, I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Noroi the Curse.
Oh my God. That film is so scary. It has this feeling of building dread throughout. I mean, Noroi is incredible. I totally forgot about Noroi. And you know, if I'm not wrong, and I might be wrong on this, I should check this. But I think the filmmakers who did Us Above So Below did the Poughkeepsie Tapes.
John Eric Dowdle.
Yes, I think the same film.
Yeah.
And that film is also like it hits on many levels.
It's brutal.
There is a found footage film which is very controversial, for reasons which are totally understandable, because I do feel it's a bit it handles themes not in the most sensitive way, and it's kind of
can I guess Megan is Missing.
Yes.
Yep, dude, as soon as you said it, I was like, I know it.
Well done.
That's crazy, man. Yeah,
but that movie is terrifying. I don't know what it is about that film, but there are certain moments which happen later on, and there is a specific moment. I was watching that film on my laptop a couple of years ago, at home at night in bed on my laptop. I got the jolt of a lifetime, and I kind of just paused the film and I had to take a breath, and I'm like, I didn't see that coming. And
I know exactly what you're talking about. I make it a point to see every movie that I watch twice, at least twice. And Megan is Missing, I have only seen one time. I have no interest in seeing it again. It was just such like a soul ripping climax of a movie. And like, I mean, that is just a testament to the film itself and to the director and the actors for selling everything so well. But like that just hit on such a visceral level for me that I have, in the most respectful way possible, I have no interest in ever seeing it again.
Absolutely. Totally on that. And I actually saw it, and it's funny, I've watched it and then a couple of months later kind of had a certain, I don't know what it was. Was it TikTok or was something? It kind of like had a certain moment during the pandemic when it had become super popular and everybody was talking about Megan is Missing. But sometimes there is a weird alchemy to just any kind of movies and all these kind of creative things. There's something about that film which really gets under your skin. And again, as you're right, testament to that, the film and the filmmakers and all the people behind it. But one time watch was enough for me.
We could keep going. We could keep talking for hours. I want to thank you for coming on, Virat. This was so much fun. And if people want to check out your work, if they want to, you know, talk to you on social media, anything you want to promote, please feel free.
My YouTube channel, which is basically my name, Virat Pal, which is where you can find the bells and my other short facelift and hopefully some more stuff in the future. And again, my name, Virat Pal, which is basically, I have my Instagram, sort of handle. So feel free to reach out to me, and I you know, and check out VHS Beyond if you haven't yet. It's fun.
For sure. There will be links to everything in the description and the show notes. Thank you again so much, Virat. I will definitely be in touch soon, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.
Take care.